Today I wanted to talk about the 17 lies. Now I know that many of you have already gone through the 17 lies and read the 17 lies because you've told me about it. And that's good. But today I want to talk about the 17 lies from a different approach. I want to talk about them as they apply to sales. It's very interesting when they're applied that way, and it's also very helpful to those of us who are in the profession of sales. The 17 lies began as rationalizations and limitations that my clients would tell me when I worked with them and talked to them. Over the years, the past 10, 15, 20 years, I've had occasion to work with a lot of top performers and a lot of more mediocre performers. And along the way, I always found that they would tell me about their limitations. And I would patiently listen and try to talk them out of their limitations, and they'd try to talk me into what their limitations really were. And that seemed to be their obsession. One day I was working with a person, and finally I just blurted out. I guess I was tired or upset or was having a distressful day, and I said, "You know, you're just lying to me. It's not that you can't do that. Of course you can do that. Don't tell me there's nothing you can do. There's a lot you can do. So let's work with the truth. Let's you and I work with the truth, because if we work with the truth and we don't lie to each other, we're going to get to your success so much faster than if we do it this way." Well, my client was just absolutely shocked. He stared at me for a long time. It's really not a great relationship builder to tell someone that they've just lied to you or to call someone a liar. I don't recommend it. And if I hadn't been as tired as I was, I don't think I would have done it. But the remarkable thing was, the client all of a sudden began to smile. He sat back in his chair and he said, "You know, you're right." And I said, "What?" And he said, "You know, you're right. That's not the truth at all, is it?" And I said, "No, it's not." And he said, "You're right. There's a lot I can do." "Yes, there is." And from that moment forward, I thought, you know, this is something that has value. It has consulting value. It has coaching value. So I began to compile these things that I call lies, that are self-limitations people put on themselves, and they don't quite know they're doing it. You know how you can lie to yourself and not really be aware on a conscious level that you are? As I compiled them, and as I began to work with people with these things, and we got crystal clear, and they could see them as clearly as I could, they were able to set them aside and then decide, okay, given that this is not really true and that I can really do a lot more than I say I can, what is it that I'd really like to accomplish? And then we'd move on. And we'd move toward that goal so much faster. Well, this applies in sales more than anything I can think of. It really has a wonderful application. So let's walk through the 17 lies and see what we can gain in a sales perspective. Lie number one, it's who you know. Everyone walks around saying, "It's who you know." If you know somebody in a position of power over in that business, in that family, if you know somebody or you know somebody who knows somebody, then you're luckier. You can sell faster. It means a lot more. In fact, people take it to an even larger degree. They say it's who you know in life. It's all about your connections. It's all about your contacts. To a certain degree, that has some truth. To a certain degree, it's very valuable to know people in the community, to know a lot of people in a certain business. But it isn't the end all, and that's how people try to sell it. That's the lie. In the end, it's not who you know. That's not the most important thing. In the end, the most important thing is, what is it that you can do? What have you got? It's not who you know, it's what you've got. When a salesperson is devoted to a client, that salesperson knows what he's got or what she's got. And that is a deep commitment to take care of the client, to give them advice, to give them a good product, to look after them, to give them service, if there's ever anything wrong with the product, to be there. And that's the true relationship between a salesperson and a client, not just some customer that you sell something to, but a real client, a real trusted friend in your life now. And people who sell a great deal surrender, give up the pretense of being shallow professionals, and start to make friends everywhere and get close to people, learn a lot about them. So in the end, it's not who I know necessarily, but it's what I've got. If I've got something that can help someone else, they don't really care if they knew me or if I know their uncle or if my father knows their brother. That's not the most important thing. The most important thing is whether or not I can help them, whether or not I can take care of them, and whether I'll take good care of them, give them peace of mind, give them the kind of coverage, the kind of product, the kind of service that gives them peace of mind and lets them know they've taken care of themselves and taken care of their family in a very quality way, and that there's really, what I mean to say is there's really no risk. There's not a risk in the world if anything goes wrong or if anything's disappointing. Because of the client relationship, you and I will fix it together. So it's a lie to say it's just who you know and that's everything. The truth is, it's what you can do, what you can provide, and even more helpful than that, how you can take care of someone. That's the main thing in life. Lie number two, there's something wrong with me. You always hear people say, if they're failing in what they're doing, whether it's sales or anything else, that I've got some kind of personality problem. There's something about me that's a weakness, or something about my personality or my character or my makeup that isn't strong, that doesn't allow me to succeed to the same degree that other people succeed. This is just simply not true. This is really not true. Everyone in a selling situation, unless they have some kind of defect that would never allow them to be hired to begin with, some kind of mental shortcoming that would never allow them to be hired, or some kind of criminal shortcoming or addictive shortcoming that would never allow them to be hired to begin with, everyone can succeed, and everyone can succeed in a very large way in sales. There is nothing wrong with anyone. And I'll have to tell you this, with the clients that I work with, I have never sat down across from a client or worked with a client who was a salesperson who really had anything genuinely wrong with them that was in the way of them going right to the top of the team and succeeding in a big way. But at the same time, it's a very popular lie to say there's something wrong with me. It's a very popular thing. You hear people all the time saying, you know, I'm not very good on the phone, or I'm not very good with people, I'm not good at small talk, I'm not good at closing, I have a hard time with money, and they give themselves all these negative personality conflicts, negative personality characteristics, and they just aren't true. And if they are true to some degree, let's say someone is a little bit shy, let's say someone's personality, someone's communication style is not that of a big, happy fraternity guy, Ken doll, towel snapper type person. Let's say someone's more of what you would call in high school a nerd type, an intellectual type, someone who's shyer, someone who's more of a bookish type person. Well, that very trait is something that can be used to inspire great warmth and great trust in a client and in a prospect. There isn't anything that we feel is a weakness in the way we come across that cannot be used as a genuine strength. And the way it can be converted into a strength is to focus not on myself, not on my so-called shortcoming, but to focus on the client, to continue to turn my attention from myself, from my company, even from my product for the moment, to the client. How can I help you? What's your life like? Who are your children? What are they like? What are their names? Are they cared for? Do you have policies that cover them? Can the products help them? How can I help you? Tell me about your life. What are your greatest dreams? What are your greatest fears? The more I focus on the client, the less my so-called imaginary shortcomings harm me, and the more they come through as genuine aspects of how I'm going to take care of you. Line number 3, I'm too old for that. Now, many of us walk around saying, I'm too old for this, I'm too old for that, I'm too old to get enthusiastic about selling this, I'm too old, I've been here 20 years, I've been here 10 years, I've been here 8 years, I'm too old to get excited, to get fired up, to really go gung-ho, I'm too old for this, I'm too old to exercise, I'm too old to get really healthy and in good shape, I'm too old for this and that. And people say that all the time. I had a person come up to me in a seminar. She was about 35 years old, and she said, you know, I've always wanted to be an actress. That was my dream, that was my goal all my life as a little girl. Of course, now I'm too old for that. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, to be an actress, to really do it right, you have to start when you're young. You have to start as a teenager and go to acting school, and you have to do touring and off-Broadway and things like that. You have to really build by the time you're 35. And I said, oh, I see, okay. Well, whatever your limitation is in your own mind, that's what your limitation is in real life. Any limitation that you argue for and that you talk about and you try to convince others that you have, that's real. You've just made it real, and there's no way around that one. You see, one of the things that I wanted to say to this person, didn't have time, and I thought of it later. You know how you always think of things later that would be wonderful. And that is, John Houseman came to mind. John Houseman is an actor. Well, he started acting when he was 83 years old. 83. And he won an Emmy Award. So he actually became quite a good actor. So I'm not too old for that. That's a lie. Other people use a version of this and say, well, I'm too young. I'm too inexperienced. I don't have any credibility with these clients. I'm so young, I'm so inexperienced, and they've been in this business for so many years, and they know it inside out. How are they going to trust me if I'm going to be an advisor to this person? How are they going to trust me and listen to me? Well, really, you're not too young for that, because if your position is, I am going to serve you, I'm going to take great care of you, I admire you and respect you, you can. Being young fits into that picture quite nicely, because the focus is on the client and not on my own imaginary shortcoming. Let's look at lie number 4. Lie number 4 is, I can't because I'm afraid. See, this is a thing that grown-ups do that children don't do in our society, and it especially hits people who are in the world of sales. They equate being afraid to do something, being nervous about doing something, being intimidated by someone, they equate that with not being able to do it. Let's say I'm afraid to ask for this business. I'm having a nice conversation. Everything's going well. I can tell that my prospect likes me. And I know that there's a good timing point right now to probably ask something. And I say to myself, should I ask? Should I ask for the business? Should I just very naturally say, may I have your business here? May we work with you on this? And I don't. Why? When I look back, I tell myself it was because I was afraid. But let's look at this, I can't because I'm afraid business. Children don't go through that. Children quite often are afraid and also do something. They learn later to duck everything they're afraid of. That becomes their system later on, but when they're young, they do all kinds of things they're afraid of. They get up on bikes they're afraid to be up on. They get up on a high dive and jump off even though they're afraid. They try all kinds of scary things. As we get older, we talk ourselves out of it. One of the greatest things we can do in sales is say, hey, I'm afraid to do this. I'm going to do it. hey, I'm intimidated by this person. I'm going to call him. Hey, this scares me. I'm going to do it. Because if I can start doing that, it is thrilling on the other side. It is so exciting to do the things I thought I was afraid to do, but I did it anyway. If I'm afraid to cold call, if I'm afraid to ask for business, if I'm afraid to close, if I'm afraid to do anything, the best thing I can do for my selling and hitting my goals, for my own prosperity, for my family, is to do it anyway. That's permissible. That's allowable. A lot of people think, oh, really? I didn't remember that. Sure, I did that when I was a kid. Yeah, I could start doing a little more of that. And that's the great thing about selling, is it gives us opportunities throughout the day to come up face to face with things we're afraid to do. Now, we're not just stark raving afraid. We just feel that little twinge of insecurity, that little, I'm not too comfortable doing this. But in the long run, that's really what's great about the selling profession, is that I do get to do things like that. I do get to raise my own self-esteem, improve the estimate I have of my own level of courage throughout the day. Other professions don't have that. Lie number five. I'd love to do that, but I don't have the time. Actually, lie number five is two lies. First of all, if I'd love to do that, I would do that. It's not that I don't have the time to do it. That's not really it. Here's what it is. I have not prioritized this. I've not prioritized it. So the thing is, I would not love to do it. It's not a priority for me. If it was a priority, I would be doing it. I do what I prioritize. By the way, everyone does what they prioritize. They don't do things because other people want them to. They themselves finally have to prioritize it. If someone says, hey, I know you're married, I know you're happily married, but will you go out with my wife's sister and come to Las Vegas with us and go to all the topless bars for about a week and not go to work? Actually, that doesn't sound so bad, but I'm just using that as an example. If someone says that to you, you can say, no, I'm not going to do that. That's not a priority for me to have that kind of fun. So no. So we don't just do what people ask us to do, but a lot of times people pretend that's all they do. I'd love to do that, but I don't have the time. When everyone says that to you, they are not telling you the truth. The truth is really this. That's not a priority of mine. If it were a priority, I'd be doing it. A lot of times people in sales say things like, you know, I'd love to do more research on my clients, but I don't have the time. I'd love to do more cold calling, but I don't have the time. I'd love to go out and see my clients and visit them and see them on site, but I don't have the time. The truth is we all have the same amount of time. We all have the time. We all have the same 24 hours. We have different priorities. And when we really see that, we can say this to ourselves. Would going out and spending time with this client or this prospect, would I get a high return on that activity, given what my goal is? If I would, I'm going to do it. If I wouldn't, I'm not. And that's how I set my priorities. I do things that I prioritize. There's none of this nonsense about there's things I'd love to do, but I don't have the time. I've got all the time in the world. Lie number six. There's nothing I can do. Now, these are lies that people tell to keep themselves out of action. And a lot of times, for example, in sales, someone will have an objection. They'll say, no, I can't work with you. I don't have time. I'd love to buy your product, but I don't have time to look at it right now. See me in 5 months, see me a year from now, see me 2 years from now, call me in a month, because I don't want to talk to you right now. Now, here's what happens. The salesperson says, oh, boy, well, there's nothing I can do. They don't want to talk to me. Well, wait a minute here. What do you mean there's nothing I can do? That's not true. They don't want to talk to me. They don't want to give up a lot of time. They don't want to read through a lot of things. They don't want to listen to a long proposal. They've told me that. But they didn't tell me that they don't want to get a nice little note. They didn't say, I wouldn't appreciate a handwritten letter from you with a new idea about how I could take this product into my life without costing me a lot of time and attention, or with a new idea about how my wife could handle the details for me and all I would have to do is sign it, with a new idea about how you'd be willing to meet with my wife or my accountant, with a new idea about how we could do this in another way that wouldn't take time, wouldn't be hassling. If I have a burning desire to really take care of my clients, really hook up with them, do a great job for them, and get them under my roof and get them to do a lot of business with me in a lot of different ways, then there are many things I can do in the face of an objection. An objection is really just a client telling me how things can work. In other words, if he says it won't work because of this, what he's really telling me is if you can solve this, it'll work. If you can solve this one aspect of it, it'll work. So if someone says it won't work because of the price, it won't work because I don't have the cash flow right now, what he's really saying to me is, if you can solve for me in some way the cash flow aspect of this transaction, you got a deal. So it's not true when I say there's nothing I can do. There's always something I can do. Lie number 7. I worry because I care. People say, I worry about my future because I care. I worry about the business because I care. I worry about my daughter because I care. I worry about my wife because I care. I worry about my husband's drinking because I care so much. That's not true. The truth is, I worry because I worry because I worry because I worry. People worry because they get in the habit of worrying. They're not showing genuine concern that leads to action. That's a different category. They just worry, and they keep worrying. Then they worry some more, and then they worry about this, and then they worry about that. And it never leads to any action. And the reason they worry is because they've gotten in the habit of worrying. In some funny way, it gives them the sense that they're paying some sort of attention to the problem. They're not ignoring the problem. After all, they're worrying about it. The most effective approach for anything that worries me as a salesperson is to ask a quick question. All right, if it bothers me in any way, if it concerns me, especially if it's in the way of my goals that I'm committed to achieving, what can I do? What action can I take? And by the way, if there's no action whatsoever that I can conceive of taking after brainstorming it with myself for a long time, then there's no reason to worry about it. If there's no solution, there's no problem. If there's no solution, there's no problem. It's a fact of life. It's part of the playing field. Let's get going. Let's get back in the game. Lie number 8. I'm sadder now, but wiser. I'm sadder now, but wiser. This is just an ultimate lie of someone who has given up. Someone who has decided to become a really totally negative person about everything, about the company, about management, about customers, about the economy, about situations, about circumstances. I'm going to just give up. I'm going to quit. I'm going to become a pessimist. I'm going to approach it with low energy from now on. I don't have the energy anymore. And so I'm going to say I'm sadder now but wiser. Ah, I know so much. If I didn't know so much, I wouldn't be so sad. If I didn't know this business so well, I wouldn't be so pessimistic. If I didn't know this company so well, I wouldn't be so discouraged. I wouldn't cast such a slime, all the negative kinds of eyes that I cast on anything new that the company introduces. I wouldn't do that. You see, it's not that I'm sadder now, but wiser. The truth is, if I'm truly wiser, in other words, if I'm learning more and more and more about how life works, how sales works, how free enterprise works, how psychology works, how my clients think, how my clients dream, what my clients feel deep feelings about, the wiser I get, the smarter I get, the more I learn about that stuff, the happier I am. That's really how life works. the wiser I get, the happier I am. That's really the truth. So when people try to sell other people in the company or their families about, oh, I'm weary, it's if you knew as much as I knew, you'd be kind of melancholy too. That's just an absolute lie. Don't buy that from anybody. Lie number 9. The longer I have a habit, the harder it is to break. This is a very interesting lie because almost everybody believes this is true. And even for, I'd say, I don't know how many years, even when my clients were trying to sell me on this lie for so many years, I would accept it. Yeah, that's true. You've had this habit a long time. You've had the habit of disorganization a long time, so I see why it's hard for you to organize your files about your clients. You've had this habit of procrastination all your life. I understand that. So I can see why it would be hard to break that one. You've had this habit, so I can see why, because you've had it so long, it would be hard to break. Well, that was a lie. It's not really true. I started doing some work with a hypnotherapist by the name of Lindsay Brady. He became one of my best friends, and he is a very fascinating, brilliant man. One of the things he taught me when I first got to know him was habits, once they get in the system, are no harder to break if you've had it for 20 or 30 years than they are if you've had it for 1 year or 2 years. He works a lot with people who want to quit smoking. And he says if he gets a smoker in his office who has been smoking for, say, 60 years, here's a person who's 75 years old and started smoking at the age of 15 on the ranch, been smoking for 60 years, that person will go through exactly the same process in quitting smoking than someone who's been smoking for 2 years, some 19-year-old who started at 17. They'll go through precisely, exactly the same process. So it's not really true that the longer I have a habit, the harder it is to break. The truth is, all habits can be quickly replaced if my commitment to do so is crystal clear, decisive, and strong, and I don't have to revisit that decision every moment based on current feelings. It's an intellectual decision, and I've already made it. That's step number one. And step number two is if what I replace that habit with is better than the habit. So there are many habits that salespeople develop early on and they can kind of get away with and they can sell enough to make a living. But then as they get a little bit older and get into it more, they see, you know, if that habit weren't there, I'd be at the top of this team. I'd be leading the team. When they see that, that's when they tell themselves the lie. Well, I've had that habit for a long, long time. And as you know, and as everybody knows, the longer I have a habit, the harder it is to break. That's simply a lie. Lie number 10. People really upset me. Well, anyone who says that people upset them or this person upsets me, management upsets me, the receptionist upsets me, my client upsets me, my wife upsets me, my teenager upsets me. That's a fundamental misunderstanding of how the biocomputer works. The brain does not work that way. The only thing in life that can ever upset me is my judgment of something. My evaluation and my interpretation is what upsets me. We've talked before about micromanaging, and it's a good example. There are two ways to look at micromanaging. One is people don't trust me. People are doing Mickey Mouse checking up. They don't acknowledge how successful I really am. They don't acknowledge the big picture, which says that I am really hitting the big numbers and helping the company in a big way. Instead, they're focused on some little nitpicky performance measurement deal that demeans me and makes me feel like a child and a naughty little boy because I haven't done my X, Y, and Z. Well, that's one way to interpret it, but there's 100 other ways. What upsets me is not what they've done. If I get a call saying, Steve, have you called your seminar prospects today? You said you were going to call 3 today. Have you called your 3? I'm checking in with you. I'm your spotter. I'm your coach. I'm your workout partner. Did you check them? Did you call them? And I say, yeah, I did. Or I say, no, I only called 2, but gee, I don't like you checking up on me. Whatever I think about that phone call, that will either upset me or not. It isn't the phone call that upsets me. It isn't that person that upsets me. It's my choice of interpretation. I can choose out of the habit of seeing myself as a put upon, misunderstood, unappreciated victim. I can choose to interpret that phone call as checking up on me, condescending to me, not respecting me. That's my choice. I can also choose to see it as helping me succeed. That's my choice. By the way, neither one of those choices is the truth. They are simply interpretations. So if I want to succeed at sales, I want to base my interpretations not on what I can sell to the world as truth, but rather I want to base my interpretations of things around me on what's going to help me hit my goals fastest. Lie number 11. Winning the lottery would solve everything. Well, this is an interesting lie because when people look back on their lives, I worked with a person who studied deathbed experiences, and he was a very knowledgeable person, and his focus in life was suicide. That was his expertise. He studied suicides. He helped a lot of people and a lot of families and prevented many suicides. When he went to college, his focus was the linguistics of suicide. And one of the things that he noticed in the study of human beings, self-esteem, happiness, and a feeling of fulfillment was that some kind of external windfall never produced it whatsoever. It was always an inner sense of pride, an inner sense of accomplishment that gave people their happiness in life. In other words, unearned money that comes in a windfall to someone does not solve everything. It may temporarily solve some things that are annoying me, but far from solving everything, the studies on lottery winners even, for example, show that people who win the lottery, 7 people out of 10 in a recent study, 5 years later wish they had not won. Why? Well, it was okay for a while, but then their life became a nightmare. The money went away, they made some bad investments, relatives hit on them constantly, they finally had to move, some of them even changed their names, because they couldn't go through an hour without some relative or friend calling and saying, hey, you know, you didn't really earn that money, why don't you give us some of it? I've got a daughter who's really sick, and you just won it in the lottery. You're going to keep it? You're going to buy a boat with it? How's that fair? And so their lives became nightmares. Also, unearned money is spent and invested differently than earned money. It is not respected. It's not considered my life's energy. It's just considered a windfall. So it's not really true that winning the lottery would solve everything. One of the things that people in sales miss is the tremendous joy and satisfaction that occurs when someone hits their goal and earns a great deal of money for themselves through their own courageous, industrious, creative activity, their own actions, their own energy, their own detective work, their own willingness to learn and understand clients, their own willingness to get a breakthrough, to get a wonderful feeling about a new way to sell somebody, a new way to appeal and persuade. These are the things that make people feel great about themselves. And this is the kind of money that when it comes from doing those kinds of activities feels wonderful. It's usually wisely invested. It's well taken care of. And it takes care of the person financially in the long run. Lie number 12 says, they're too beautiful for this world. And really the lie is about thinking that there are people who don't really fit the free enterprise system, thinking that there are people who are too innocent, too soulful, too honest to be good salespeople. And often we think this of ourselves. You know, I have to be a con man, and I'm not willing to be a con man. You know, I have to be kind of a huckster, and I'm not willing to do that. I'm too honest, I'm too straightforward to be a good salesperson. The truth of the matter is, this is simply a lie. When you examine who is at the top of the team, every time I go into clients in a group of salespeople, when I get to meet the people who are really doing beautifully, the people who are breaking the bank, creating prosperity for themselves, these are the people who really are beautiful. They aren't people who are shysters and people who are shallow hucksters and people who are con men and things like that. They're people who are genuine. They're people who take genuine interest in their customers and clients. Those are the people who sell the fastest. The people who quit trying to guess about whether I should really be in sales, whether this is an honorable profession, whether I'm doing the right thing for my client. The people who realize, look, I'm serving this person. I'm paying attention to this client. I'm taking care of this client. I'm becoming a trusted friend. I'm becoming an advisor. People who take that approach, who really care deeply about other people and learn to do it through practice. It doesn't come from some kind of genetic character aspect of a person. It comes from practice. Caring comes from practice. Caring for other people comes from practice. People who practice that get good at it. And then they also get good at sales. Lie number 13. You hurt my self-esteem. People who think their self-esteem depends on whether they're respected, whether they're treated nicely, whether they're treated fairly by other people, they have a misconception of what self-esteem is. There's a clue to where self-esteem comes from in the word itself. Self-esteem. It's called self-esteem. It's not called manager esteem. It's not called spouse esteem, what my spouse says to me, what my spouse thinks about me. It's not called kids esteem, what my kids think of me, how they treat me. It's called self-esteem. It's what I think of myself based on my own behavior, my own responses to other people, my own creativity, my own service, my own success, my own achievement. That's where self-esteem comes from. It comes from achievement. It comes from doing something and achieving something. People are so mixed up about self-esteem, and especially when they blame other people for it. If I want my self-esteem to rise, the fastest way is to put my focus on achieving what I set out to achieve. That's what raises self-esteem. Lie number 14. It's a shame we didn't capture that on video. And really what I meant by that lie is people who focus on the past, people who wish everything was like it was in the past, people who want you to come over to their house and look at their slides of their vacation, people who get a couple drinks in them and they just want to talk about their high school days or 10 years ago. Remember how this company used to be? We used to go out for a ride. We used to participate in the rodeo. Things used to be better. We used to do this. We don't do that anymore. And all this focus on the past. Focusing on the past is just a way out of the present. It's a bailout. It's a surrender. It's a flight. It's an escape. It doesn't work. It's never satisfying. It's like flirting with a corpse. there's no real response. No, you can't get rejected when you flirt with a corpse, but there's no wonderful, satisfying result either, unless you're a little weirder than most of us. So, living in the past, wishing things were like they used to be, that is not helpful, that is not resourceful, that is not courageous, and that is not creative, and that won't lead me anywhere I want to go. Lie number 15, that's just the way I am. Now, this lie is really interesting in sales because it's the lie that has to do with permanent personality. In other words, I've got this permanent personality. It's the way I am, and it's just the way I am. Did you close the sale? No. Did you ask for the business? No. Did you ask for the big total package you wanted? No. Why? Well, you know, I like to go slowly. That's just the way I am. Did you do this? No. Why? I'm shy. That's just the way I am. People make up permanent characteristics for themselves, and they say, that's just the way I am. But it's not really true. If they had to be some other way for some emergency reason, it wouldn't take them any time to be another way. If you were new at the company, and the president said, you know what, we're going to have a big company dinner, and you're going to be a greeter, and we're going to have a lot of our customers and clients come to the dinner, and you're going to be at the door, and I want you to welcome people. We always have the new people in the company become greeters. Now, would you say to the president, you know what, I'm a little shy, so when they come to the door, I'm not going to be able to greet them. I'm not going to be able to look them in the eye, smile, and say welcome like you want me to, because that's my personality. That's just the way I am. I'll probably have my back to them and be drinking from the punch bowl. I hope that's okay with you. There's nothing I can do about it because that's just the way I am. Now, the truth of the matter is, how I am is really more dependent on my burning desire, my definite major purpose, and my goals. Let's say I have a burning desire and a really big goal to succeed in this company, to have the president like me and respect me and be proud of me and be impressed by me. So when he says, will you be the greeter? I say, sure, I'll be the greeter. And even if my tendency in the past was not to be very open, smiling, and welcoming, I will do it tonight at the company dinner. I'll be an actor if I have to. Who do I need to be to achieve my goal? And that's really more moral, that's really more authentic than people saying, well, I never keep my promises, I never keep my goals, I never keep my commitments to myself or to my family because I have to keep my personality instead. It's just the way I am. That, by the way, is a lie. Lie number 16. What doesn't kill me makes me stronger. Now, if you've read the 17 Lies book, you know that lie number 16 has everything to do with self-destruction. It's a lie about addictions we pretend not to have. And I talked in the book about an addiction I had, many addictions I had, but a primary addiction. And for years I was in denial and it was destroying my life. And I was saying things like, well, you know what? What doesn't kill me just makes me stronger. Anything that's physically self-destructive can't be helping me, can't be giving me relief from anything, can't really be making me stronger in any way. And the minute I wake up to that and see the way for my success to really happen and my happiness and my family is for me to be the healthiest I can be, for me to be to the cleanest and clearest I can be as a human being approaching my life. And once that occurs, I succeed faster. That's all there is to it. Finally, lie number 17. Lie number 17 is kind of a redundancy. Lie number 17 is actually redundancy, as I said, because, I'll tell you why, it repeats all the other lies. Lie number 17 is the lie that's inside all the other lies. It's the basic lie that all the other lies are versions of. And it's a lie that says, I'm helpless. That's the ultimate lie. Because human beings are anything but helpless. Human beings have enormous creative, intellectual resources, energy resources, when they make their minds up to achieve something. You've seen it in your kids. You've seen it in everyone you've ever known. You've seen it in yourself. Every time you absolutely, without going back on it, make your mind up to achieve something, I defy you to think of a time you haven't achieved it. When you've absolutely no going back, burning my bridges, I am going to do that no matter what, I defy you to think of a time you haven't done it. So what's generally and in most cases in the way of success is a commitment to myself, a clean and clear decision to myself that says, I'm doing this. I'm hitting that number. You can count on it. I can count on it. The universe can count on it.